This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time 1205. Good afternoon. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Rob Hart for Chris Kreidel. 65 degrees in Chicago under mostly sunny skies, topping out at 70 today. A breezy, warm afternoon. The complete AccuWeather forecast is coming up.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park and also sponsored by Chicago Proton Center. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street from Bloomberg. Here's Lisa Parenti.
Well, Cisco and Rob, the Dow has done it, topping 23,000 for the first time, and the round number milestone appears to have pulled investors off the sidelines for a while. Shortly after the Dow reached 23,000, we saw some improvement with records all around. Taking a step back from that now, the Dow up 21 points and the benchmarks at 22,977. NASDAQ off 3, S&P down 1. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index lower by less than a tenth of a percent. This Dow 1,000-point milestone comes only 2.5 months after it topped 22,000 for the first time. And if the Dow is at 23,000 at the closing bell, it will be the sixth milestone in a year and the fifth since Election Day. All the more remarkable, on this week, Wall Street is marking the 30th anniversary of Black Monday. That was the biggest one-day stock market collapse in history, and it happened on October 19th, 1987. Back to you, Cisco and Rob.
Well, coming up on the program, we will digest the latest numbers, industrial production picking up in September, and then home builder confidence. And then at 12:19, Wall Street has got a case of Netflix and thrill. They are very happy with the streaming service, which has beat analyst estimates, and it's also spending $8 billion on new original content.
Travel Tuesday, it may pay to ditch your relatives over Thanksgiving. We'll tell you how. And Howard Davidowitz joins us to give us an update on retail and what to expect for Black Friday and Halloween.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A reading on home builder sentiment and a tally of factory output lead today's data. We're joined by Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com, based in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Greg, welcome back to the program. Let's talk about industrial production. Overall industrial production increased by 0.3% in September. That is ahead of some expectations. Now, is this a reflection of the industrial sector really picking up, or is this kind of a correction after the hurricanes came through?
Well, I think it's in part a bounce back from the big decline that we had seen in the month of August. But it is reflective of, I think, the general direction we're moving from an economic standpoint. And, you know, even just, you know, the overall increase in manufacturing output, durable goods, that manufacturing increased at a faster pace and offset the decrease that we had seen in non-durable goods during the month of September.
When you see durable goods orders and manufacturing pick up like that, what does that say about the broader economy?
Well, I think it indicates a level of confidence that companies have the capital to invest and that they're willing to invest it with the idea that the economy is going to continue to expand and that those investments are going to pay off in the form of greater production down the road.
So, Greg, you look at a lot of data, even beyond some of these things that we're talking about today. Anything that you see that overly concerns you about the economy, especially as we look for more growth?
Nothing from a concerning standpoint. I mean, we're not hitting the cover off the ball. We kind of have this slow, steady growth. Inflation is, still low. Interest rates still low. The fact that we're a little overdue when it comes time for a stock market correction. Valuations have gotten a little bit stretched. Investors willing to pay more per dollar of earnings. In the context of a slow growth economy with very low productivity growth, the seems to be a little bit of a mismatch there. Wouldn't be surprised if we did see a correction at some point. Like I said, we're overdue. They tend to come every 12 months or so, and it's been about 20 months and counting since our last market correction.
Seems like a lot of investors are just waiting for something better to put their money in. It's in a low-interest environment. It's been a little tough to make money.
Well, the market's up 16% year-to-date. So, you know, it's the investors that, you know, have been sitting this one out that, you know, I think really have those regrets because you're right, interest rates maybe going up, but you're not seeing a whole lot of that in terms of your very safe haven investments like bank accounts. The increases that we've seen, even on the very best savings accounts, they're only about a quarter of a percentage point or so higher than they were at the beginning of the year.
Okay, so we've established this is more of a Juan Pierre-style recovery. There's no home runs, just spraying singles all over the outfield. How does either the Federal Reserve possibly raising interest rates later this year or a tax reform package change that equation?
Well, from the interest rate standpoint, you know, we've already weathered two interest rate hikes this year just fine. Three, if you go back to last December. So if they do raise rates again in December, that'll be four in the 12 months. You know, we've got an economy that's not dependent on those low interest rates like we had been and needed them after the financial crisis. So still a vote of confidence in the economy. As for the tax reform, you know, we're still very early in the negotiation stage. I'll believe it when I see it. And, you know, I think until then, it's just purely conjecture on that front.
Thanks a lot, Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst, Bankrate.com, based in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Coming up, Netflix makes a push towards more original and exclusive content.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Netflix is telling shareholders its future lies in exclusive original content, and the streaming service is making major investments to obtain and produce it. Let's break down the strategy with Tim Hanlon, Managing Director of the Vertere Group here in Chicago. Pretty significant move to original content here, Tim. What's Netflix saying it's going to do?
Hey, Cisco. The announcement yesterday, part of their earnings call, basically is just it's a monstrous quarter. They continue to add tons of subscribers, perhaps even a bit more so than they even envisioned. But the composition, the mix of the programming that's on Netflix is about in today's definition about 85% of that content from Netflix is licensed, which means that only 15%. And now, obviously, growing is content that Netflix is actually producing or buying directly for its own exclusive use. And their desire is to actually get that closer to more like a 50-50 split in the next couple of years and with aggressive cash assortment to go after such.
Why the aggressive nature of this? I mean, why are they investing so much in such a short time?
Well, you know, look, they're nearing 100 million worldwide subscribers, right? They just added 5.3 million across the globe, almost a million of those in the United States alone just last quarter. So it's clear that there is a ramp up of the interest in what Netflix offers. I think, frankly, though, it's also a bit of testament to the fact that this general and broader phenomenon of cord cutting and or streaming video generally is growing. So I expect that we see similar growth numbers for places like Hulu and Amazon Prime and others of the sort too. But Netflix clearly being the biggest and earliest, probably benefiting the most from such.
$8 billion to make 50% of its content original programming by next year. How many of those shows have to be a hit, you know, attract more people into the service for this to actually make sense?
So, Rob, that's a tremendous question because Netflix is famously guarded in its ability to understand who's watching what shows, how popular each show is, and frankly not sharing that with the broader entertainment community and the studios that are pitching them. I think it's pretty clear that Netflix understands, because of streaming and the technology involved, the data about who's watching and what. And the definition of what is a quote-unquote hit show is going to be different. It could be a smaller overall number of viewers, but it could be a high concentration of certain data-driven attractive users. And I think that's what Netflix is has to their advantage, and they're clearly keeping close to the vest as they look to invest in more programming.
And that is also, in a way, a hedge against losing some movies, TV shows to rival services like we already saw with Disney.
I think that's absolutely true. I think you see a lot of these quote-unquote legacy media companies recognizing that they need to be much more aggressive and more directly distributing and controlling the distribution of their own content and pulling back from what they gave away, if you will, to Netflix for those easy checks a few years ago. They want to bring it back and own it themselves now, so no doubt.
I hesitate to even bring this up, but will Netflix at some point, do you think, have to go to ads in their service? Because at some point you're going to run out of new subscribers.
Well, Cisco, that's a very, very good question and highly debatable depending on who you ask. But there's no mistake that there is room to grow the pricing, sadly, if you're a consumer. Arguably, it's relatively inexpensive and probably some room to grow subscription pricing. But suffice to say, I think that advertising, judicious, targeted, and data-driven advertising, that is not replicating what we see on television with 22 minutes an hour of commercials, is absolutely got to be on their strategic roadmap. I'm certain of it. Certainly Amazon is thinking that too.
Tim Hanlon, always appreciate you being with us. Great insight. Tim is managing director at the Vertair Group here in Chicago. Up next, we'll get a look at the markets from Bloomberg.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's get the latest in the markets. Sponsored by Lake Forest Sports Cars, the Ferrari specialists, here's Elisa Parenti of Bloomberg.
Well, we are narrowly mixed with the Dow up 18 points or about a tenth of a percent and the benchmark holding at 22,975. NASDAQ lower by 3, S&P off 2. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is down a tenth of a percent. Rest in peace, Chicago Board Options Exchange. Well, at least the name. The options market will now be called the CBO Options Exchange. And yes, it's CBO, not C-B-O-E. The name is meant to reflect its reach outside Chicago. The parent company is changing its name, too, to CBO Global Markets. Now let's get a check of the grain markets with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
Slow light trade today as harvest continues. Corn's at a 3.5 cent range from down 2.5 to down to up 1. We are down a quarter in December at 3.50 and a quarter. Beans have been down 8.5 to down 1 at the moment. November's down 4.75 at 9.86 and a quarter. And wheat's been down 2.75 to up 4. We're down 2.5 there at 4.34. Harvesting of beans and corn helping hold those prices lower. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Pete, thank you. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Rob Hart for Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are hanging around the flat line. We'll tell you what's impacting the markets.
In Travel Tuesday, airfares that provide affordable alternatives to the usual Thanksgiving and Christmas destinations.
Halloween is 2 weeks from today. We'll take a look at retail for the spooky holiday and what lies ahead between now and the new year.
Cubs play Game 3 of the National League Championship Series at Wrigley Field tonight. We'll see how much a last-minute ticket will cost you.
On Wall Street, the Dow up 18, NASDAQ down 4, the S&P is down 2 points.
AccuWeather says mostly sunny for the rest of the afternoon, breezy and warmer, a high near 70. And if you are going to the Cubs game tonight, first pitch temperature 62 degrees. Right now, it's 65 degrees in Chicago.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park and also sponsored by Woodlands Academy of the Sacred Heart.
The Cubs are back home at Wrigley Field following a rough trip to L.A. Let's check in on ticket prices for games 3, 4, and hopefully 5 on the north side. We're joined by Sean Pate, vice president of the mobile ticketing app Game Time, based in San Francisco. Sean, welcome back to the program. Big difference, I would say, between the first NLCS game at Wrigley Field this year versus the first NLCS game at Wrigley Field last year. Last year, the Cubs had home field. Now they don't, and they're down in a 0-2 hole, so it's probably a different market this time around.
Yeah, it really is, guys. And, you know, that's certainly advantage fan because prices are falling into a range that I think everybody can get on board with. Right now, I'm looking at standing room tickets on Game Time are under $100. And contrary to what we talked about last week, where ticket prices were well into the $200 just to get in, as mentioned, those an 0-2 hole certainly can dilute the market and bring more supply for people that have decided, maybe I'll skip this one, see how this game goes. And that has changed it dramatically for fans today.
And is it also a case that maybe last year really wet their whistle for a lot of Cubs fans? History already happened, and now if you have $200 hanging around, you could probably think of other ways to spend it.
Well, I would hate to guess that a Cubs fan is tired of playoff baseball. Certainly, I don't think that's the case. But what I do think is because there's three games this week, and the Cubs are down 0-2, and I think tonight is going to dramatically change what we're going to see the rest of the series. Obviously, a win tonight, as we saw with the Yankees yesterday, will get prices back into an escalated range and even create a game five to, you know, hundreds of dollars more. However, a loss could make a game four potentially be, you know, a $50 ticket, depending on what fans are looking at. But I think tonight, where it's a Tuesday night, it's the first of three consecutive games, so there's a little bit of softness in the market. Again, that is great for fans that are looking for last-minute deals that you can find on your mobile app just walking right to the game.
Because we're playing a team from L.A., West Coast team, the start time's after 8 o'clock. Do you ever notice that the start time actually plays a role in ticket demand?
It definitely has a factor, and certainly an early week game can do that. I mean, Tuesday night is not ideal to be out until, you know, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night, depending with the times of these games, and they have been kind of stretching longer. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. But again, a result of a win tonight will reinvigorate the fan base, and I think that will, you know, incrementally bring the market up to where we saw last week.
Sean Pate, great having you on, Vice President of the mobile ticketing app Game Time, based in San Francisco.
Markets have reached an all-time intraday high, passing the 23,000 mark. We're joined by Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and the publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast Newsletter, based in Hammond, Indiana. Chuck, welcome back to the program. Another milestone. And on the day we pass a milestone in the markets, a lot of investment advisors say don't get sucked in by milestones. But what's your feeling as the market passed 23,000 for a little while today?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice when the market surpasses kind of those round numbers. I don't think investors should think about those in any special way in terms of whether I should get into the market or not. I mean, this is just a continuation of a nice upward trend that we've seen for much of this year. And I think it's particularly interesting because of the timing. You know, we're getting into the thick of earnings season. Probably next week is really when it starts to heat up in earnest. And, you know, we rallied strongly into the earnings season, kind of thus raising the bar a bit for companies to kind of be able to, you know, beat expectations and see their stock prices move up on seemingly good earnings. And, you know, the very early going, I think, has been pretty good, actually, in terms of the market being able to handle the earnings that have come out without, you know, showing much of a downside. In fact, some upside action, especially in the industrials today. So, early, you know, so far so good. Next week we'll have a much better view of those things, though.
One common take that you hear from a number of people is the degree to which the financial markets have been untethered from current events. There have been storms, there's been political instability at home, there has been a threat of nuclear conflict for the first time in nearly 30 years, and yet the Dow keeps chugging along.
It does, and actually I think that's it should be, because at the end of the day, the three things that really drive stock prices in a sustained way are interest rates, inflation, and corporate profits, with corporate profits probably being the most meaningful. You can go back and look at, you know, a lot of the major downturns in the markets over the years, and they generally coincide with recessions and a significant decline in corporate profits. You know, the corporate profit story is still pretty good, and it's been good. And I think that's the story that people should be focusing on here, and that's the story that will continue to either carry this market higher or not. I mean, the other factors you mentioned, you know, traders love them because you might get some day-to-day volatility on those things. But again, at the end of the day, it's all about interest rates, inflation, and corporate profits, with corporate profits being the most meaningful thing. And that has been a very bullish story for this market over the last 9 to 12 months.
Chuck, what is the Dow Theory telling us these days?
It's firmly in the bullish camp. You've had a continued series of new all-time highs by the Dow Jones Industrial Average, as well as the Dow Jones Transportation Average. You know, you had a little bit of a minor blip downward in the transportation average, but the last major move was a new all-time high confirming the industrials, and that's basically, you know, it doesn't get any better than that under the Dow Theory in terms of confirming a bull market trend.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, also publisher of the Dow Theory Forecasts newsletter.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It is just 2 weeks until Halloween. That means Black Friday and the holiday shopping season are not far away. Let's look at the forecast for retail with Howard Davidowitz, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer at Davidowitz & Associates in New York. Howard, thanks for being here. Let's begin with Halloween. What kind of spending do we expect in the costumes and candy and the decorations, all the things that people buy at Halloween?
Halloween has been the most resilient holiday for a decade. It did $6 billion 10 years ago. It'll do $9 billion now. So it's been the best performing holiday we have, period. It's fun. It's the whole family, and you don't have to spend an arm and a leg to enjoy it. So it's a terrific holiday. Sales growth has been very strong over a decade, not a year. So people spend more and more and have a better time this holiday, and it's a family holiday, and everybody takes part in it, and it all seems good.
Now, do the retailers that we talk about a lot, the struggling retailers, do they benefit at all from Halloween, or is that some of these pop-up shops and other retailers?
As far as the pop-up shops, they do the second most business because there's so many more of them than there used to be. But clearly the discounters will do well. Food stores, drug stores, all of them have Halloween merchandise. So lots of retailers will get a boost from this.
And then the moment Halloween ends and November 1st arrives, the holiday shopping season begins. Is Christmas and Hanukkah and Thanksgiving, too, are they as durable as Halloween?
Not close. That's why I started to say, if you look over a decade, Halloween has by far had the strongest growth. The others are more volatile, but if you take this year, which is an interesting year. American home values, America's biggest investment of most people is in their house. It's their most important investment. They depend on it to grow. And guess what? It's growing. So housing has been very strong. The value of housing has gone up. Fewer underwater mortgages. Half of America is involved in the stock market directly or indirectly. They're doing very well. The average American has got a net worth statement in his or her mind. But of course, it's not on a piece of paper with any fancy lawyer or accountant, but they know where they stand, and they know they're better off now. Also, the attitude of Americans about the economy is much better. In other words, no one except someone mentally deranged would believe that putting in a lot of rules and regulations, being run by some lunatic in Washington who wrote a book that said dogs, pets should have lawyers. I mean, if you've got some Looney Tunes writing a bunch of rules, destroyed community banks and everything else. So all of the really crazy stuff, really crazy, has been taken away, and we're looking for a freer economy. That's going to create real growth. By the way, we're seeing it. We're seeing real growth as we unshackle the great industry that we've got here in America and not subject them to a bunch of morons in Washington with IQs of 12.
Well, with this incredible growth taking place then, where is it going to be spent? Is it going to be spent at the store, or is it going to be spent online?
Well, clearly the fastest growing area is online. Clearly we're dramatically overstored. We have way too many stores, way too many shopping malls. That's a huge problem. We're going to continue with bankruptcies, closed stores. We're only in the second inning. Stores are too big. Everything is going to have to be restructured over a decade. That's a separate problem. We just have too much, and that's going to have to be fixed. It's going to be very painful for a lot of people who are employed. It's going to be a terrible thing, but that's going to happen. So we're going to have a huge adjustment take place as we face historic change in the retail business to more online, and that means fewer people because you got people working in a warehouse. You know, it's very different. A lot of robots are in there, too, working. So that this is going to be a damaging issue, and it's going to go on for a long time.
Howard, some of these older legacy retailers, I'm thinking companies such as Sears, why have they not been able to respond to the changing market to sort of do whatever needed to do in order to compete and thrive? Because some retailers are doing okay.
It's an excellent question, and it gets back to management, 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 management. I mean, if you see us and you get run by some guy who's in Connecticut and the company's in Chicago, and he's a very successful and good hedge fund manager, what would qualify him to run a retailer? I have no idea. So, and he says, you know, comp sales don't matter, and he cuts all the, and the guy ends up with being in a totally non-competitive situation with bad assortments and run-down stores and terrible service. That's management. That's what management does. They make choices. This guy took billions and billions of dollars and bought back shares. You can see us. Guess what? The customers didn't give a damn how many shares he bought back. They wanted great merchandise at great prices with great service with bright stores. That's what they wanted, and that's what he didn't give them. So that's management. In other words, you got good management, media management, bad management, good luck, bad luck, right sector, wrong sector. It's all complicated, but management is the difference in the retail business. And for those retailers who have too much debt, who have managed themselves poorly, who got involved with these crazy private equity deals, debt is not your friend in a time of historic change. It very seldom is your friend anyway in a volatile economy, and leverage yourself up to the roof. And even Neiman Marcus is underwater and everybody else. So that's all crazy. So if you did crazy stuff, expect a crazy result, and that's what you got.
Great stuff as always. Howard Davidowitz, Chairman and Chief Executive Order, Officer, I should say, Davidowitz & Associates, based in New York. And if you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at cbschicago.com/audio and the all-new radio.com app.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:50. Let's check in with Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst at the Price Group, also a Fox Business News contributor. Phil, a little volatility on oil. What are we seeing?
We really did. I mean, we saw oil prices go up 2 days in a row, you know, partly on increasing tensions in the Middle East. The Iraqi army went into the Kurdish Authority areas, and it did reduce oil production from that area after the Kurds voted for independence, a vote that Iraq or Turkey or Iran didn't seem to like very much. So that increased tensions. Now, oil prices did back off a little bit today on reports that the Kurdish Authority is going to back down a little bit and actually go back to where they were before. But because of that tension and increasing global demand, these prices have been on the rise.
Have we moved on past the hurricane-induced supply disruption?
I don't know if we're going to move on past that for some time. We're definitely have turned the corner. The U.S. energy industry has done a fantastic job getting production back online. But I still think there's going to be a lingering effect. You know, usually at this time of year, prices come down pretty dramatically. They're not coming down as much as they normally would have without the storm. And I think that we're going to not have that typical shoulder season, as you will, when demand is weaker and refineries come out of maintenance. So I think that's going to keep the price of crude oil high, and it raises concerns that if we have a cold winter, we could see oil prices really start to go back up again.
Phil Flynn, always good insight. Thanks for being with us. Phil is Senior Market Analyst at the Price Group here in Chicago. An update on a record day on Wall Street next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.